from Lansford to Katanning, Pittsburgh to Williamsport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a group of lawmakers have developed a comprehensive plan to streamline and reinvent state government. State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County is here with details. It has been 10 years since the Rivers Casino opened in Pittsburgh. Has it brought about the renaissance in jobs and revenue proponents projected? Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have the answer on the Allegheny Institute report. And the Fighting Chance Act would reduce a wide range of unnecessary state regulations. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Frank Ryan in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania typically rates near the bottom of surveys when it comes to business taxes and the like. Now the Tax Foundation says Pennswoods ranks 42nd in the nation in the funding ratio of its public pension plans. The state's plans are only 55% funded, which places Pennsylvania in the not-well-funded category. The underfunding of state retirement systems has been a growing concern for years, but any significant solution would be costly, and the legislature has not been willing to address the issue in any meaningful way. According to the Center Square, a legislative committee is holding hearings on ways to assist volunteer firefighters and emergency medical technicians with higher education costs. A proposal by State Representative Chris Sanato, a Democrat from Newcastle, would create a student loan forgiveness program. Another bill, sponsored by State Representative James Struzzi of Indiana, would provide tuition assistance to active volunteers. There are now only about 50,000 volunteer firefighters in the state. That's down from more than 300,000 in the 1970s. And starting this week, Pennsylvania voters will be able to apply online for absentee ballots for the upcoming November 5th general election. Republicans and Democrats alike praised the move, with Governor Tom Wolf saying it will make the process easier and fairer for thousands of voters. Although absentee ballots can be applied for online, they must still be mailed or hand-delivered to county election offices by 5 p.m. on November 1st to be counted. The deadline for applying for an absentee ballot is October 29th. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. State government is often inefficient and complex, presenting challenges to those who interact with it for business or personal purposes. Several Republican legislators have joined forces to put together a package of bills aimed to reinvent state government with an eye toward cutting costs and improving efficiency. State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County is one of those lawmakers. Frank is here with us to discuss details of the plan. Frank, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Frank, reinventing state government. Of course, we all know there are a lot of inefficiencies in state government. Even Governor Wolf in recent years has proposed consolidating or merging some departments. So what was the reason why you and your fellow legislators, and you can tell us who else has been involved in this process, have decided to put forth an entire package of bills?
This is actually the brainchild of Seth Grove, and so honored to be part of this with Seth. What's happened is in the budgeting cycle that happened in 2016 and 17 and 18, there were different efforts by the governor to introduce packages on reforming government. And Seth and I have actually become fairly good friends because of this. So in 2017, he and I were talking, and based upon my business experience and his government experience, he said, "Is this the way you would normally propose something?" I said, "Well, I haven't seen the strategic vision." And that was exactly the thrust of the questions that Seth was asking the governor's office. And it turns out there wasn't one. So Seth, myself, Paul Schemmel, Matt Dowling, candidly with blessings from then the majority whip, now the majority leader, Brian Cutler, to come up with a package of bills that would reinvent government. We had some fairly significant criteria, which is basically based upon this book that I wrote called Revolutionizing a County, where you have to start with a strategic vision. And Seth did that. And it was basically, we were looking for a requirement to reduce administrative costs by 20%, improve the delivery of government services to all the residents. We recognize that residents are a customer of ours. And we should be operating in that context as if we have a customer service responsibility. And a lot of that isn't been going on. And then the third thing was the identification, the consolidation, and the elimination of redundant programs, which, you know, that's one of the other things that we've seen throughout the Commonwealth, where you might have to go to five or six different agencies on the same topic area in order to make sure you're going through. And then the final issue was it had to improve the allocation of state funds to reduce the cost to the taxpayer. I'm firmly of a believer that we can rehabilitate government to such a way that we can do significantly more with the resources we already have without asking more from the taxpayers. So Seth took that package of bills, those requirements, and then combined it with some work that I was doing on the lean government operations, which is my House Bill 1053, and the Auditor General Fraud and Enforcement Act, which is the second part of a bill that's already in the Senate now, to help codify all these programs under a streamlined set of operations to deliver a much more sound, solid product to all the consumers in Pennsylvania. And that's what we're trying to do. We're hoping to take this funds that we can free up, for lack of a better term, to be able to use to pay down our pension liabilities and some of our other liabilities to make the Commonwealth a lot more efficient, number one. And number two, I think more importantly, reduce the cost of government so we don't have to keep going back to taxpayers saying, give us more, give us more.
Interestingly, one of the proposals you have is an Office of Management and Budget. Now, the federal government has an Office of Management and Budget. In Pennsylvania, how do we do it now? It like the governor does his own budget projections and the legislature has their own. Would this unify the effort?
It does. In fact, what's currently happening, and this bill is House Bill 52. This is Seth Grove's bill. It takes the budget office, the Department of General Services, and the Office of Administration, and the Governor's Office of Policy and Planning, and puts it into one agency that we're going to call Office of Management and Budget. And what it really does, it includes all of those strategic and operational financing programs within the state. So it would have a Bureau of Budget and Financial Management, Bureau of Planning and Policy, State Facilities and Management, Procurement, Human Resources, and Technology. And then most importantly, this GoTime program that the governor has, which is the Office of Transformation, Innovation Management, and Efficiency, which is part of my lean operation bill. What that does is it codifies it into one area. So you've got a functional, focused, responsible group of agencies working together. One of the things that my Go Lean bill does and the go time for the governor is it says, let's look at functional responsibilities and put them all together. And so by doing that, this Office of Management and Budget creates that focal point so that the budgeting and the financing of the government is done in a concise, clear fashion with strategic vision, not just operational vision. And I think a clear example of this is last year we ended up with $1.4 billion more than we had budgeted for in terms of revenue, and $748 million of that was spent before we even went to the second round of budgets. And that's just – we can't keep operating that way.
Interestingly, the governor himself had proposed, I guess almost a year or so ago or about a year or so ago now, the consolidation of some departments. It didn't go anywhere near as far as what this package of bills is proposing. But it seems to me like there might be some opportunity here, maybe at least a little glimmer of bipartisan opportunity.
Yeah, it is. And that's, I mean, I will tell you across the board, and if you know Seth well, and I know you know me very well, we which is probably much to your chagrin.
But one not of the, at all.
One of the things that happens is we're not trying to work at cross purposes with anybody. One of the bills that I just had go through, House Bill 985, which is an Auditor General Fraud and Forensic Bill, dovetails nicely with some other initiatives that the executive branch was doing. My Go Lean bill, House Bill 1053, reinforces the positive aspects of the governor's Go Time program. At the same time, reinforces what I think are good common business practices. And I think Seth has done that in his bill. In my bill, House Bill 53, which is Department of Business, Tourism, and Workforce Development, it consolidates that, as an example, trust fund management, all these business-related activities, because we were getting a lot of complaints from business people that we didn't know who to go to. And so what happened is we consolidated vocational rehabilitation, workforce development, and business finance, marketing, and tourism. And that dovetails off of something that we saw that the governor was attempting to do, but it wasn't outlined in a strategic vision. And we used some stuff that was done by the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, where it worked really well. They had a group of people that were, again, specifically trying to bring business back to the Commonwealth, which I think is particularly important for us as well if we want to start attracting younger workers.
We are talking with State Representative Frank Ryan of the 101st Legislative District. That's in Lebanon County. We're talking about reinventing state government. A package of bills has been proposed. And Frank, as we look at this package of bills, I see that in addition to functionality, you're also looking at some of the infrastructure in terms of information technology. Is that currently fragmented? And if so, how would you work to try to make that more streamlined?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It is. It's very fragmented currently. We have multiple IT functions throughout the Commonwealth. And with this emphasis on cybersecurity, most organizations recognize you have to consolidate that function while at the same time still maintaining your expertise and your ability to operate as a department. So let me give you an example. At the federal level, the Internal Revenue Service wanted to streamline its IT services within the Department of the Internal Revenue Service. And they found that they still had legacy systems going back to the 1970s. Mm-hmm. We found that in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we had the exact same problem. Well, that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yes.
And until we can sit down and have an overall strategic vision, not just for the cybersecurity end of it, but in order to develop greater and more enhanced systems, we felt we needed to put that into that type of a departmental responsibility. And some of the other bills that we've proposed under this package of bills, which is from House Bill 52 all the way through 58, it's all designed to do that. We even have a department, Representative Matt Dowling's got one, House Bill 54, to consolidate the municipal government and community affairs. And that would be able to tie in and dovetail so that we're able to use some of the lessons learned from other departments about what we need to be able to do.
Let's talk a little bit more about community affairs. There are multiple agencies that interact with municipal governments. And school districts, of course, are handled by the Department of Education. But you have municipalities, and Pennsylvania has a wide range of cities, boroughs, townships, tens of thousands of them, and they interact with different government agencies. Would this at least start to move us toward more of a one-stop shop for municipalities?
It will. Actually, what it'll do is it'll create a Department of Community Economic Development concept, and that would have the Center for Local Government, Bureau of Elections, State Athletic Commission, and Office of Local Government Consultants. And what that would all pull together in my mind that I think makes it so brilliant is it dovetails with the municipal reform bills that I've done with some of the other legislators, which falls under this umbrella of reinventing state government, saying that we need to look at this as a holistic approach. Our local governments, our cities, class 1, 2, and 3 cities, our counties and the various levels of counties, all the municipalities. It's probably one of the most complex forms of government I've ever seen in my life. Representative Dowling's bill does, and again, I think what Seth Grove has done with this entire reinventing government bill and some of the other work that I'm doing as an example in my municipal reform for debt reform, it brings it all together so that there's one functional set of responsibilities. So you can go to one group and get an answer very quickly. Our goal is to improve the responsiveness of government as well.
Well, we took a lot of information. We packed it into an interview. So I'm sure folks are going to have more questions, might want to review some of the details. So State Representative Frank Ryan, where can folks find you on the web if they want to learn more about all of this?
RepFrankRyan.com, RepFrankRyan.com. We've got a whole listing of all the detailed packages there. And again, it's House Bills 52 through 58.
State Representative Frank Ryan of the 101st Legislative District in Lebanon County. Frank, thank you for being back with us.
Thank you so much, Omen.
10 years ago, the Rivers Casino in Pittsburgh opened its doors, but it has been neither the revenue nor jobs producer touted by its early proponents. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi look at the numbers on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat. Frank, 10 years we've had legalized gaming in Pittsburgh, with the Rivers Casino celebrating its 10th anniversary. Obviously, gaming goes back a little bit farther, yep, back to 2004 when the General Assembly...
15 years overall.
Wow, yeah, it's something. When they legalized slot machines and started placing them at the horse racing tracks and then some standalone casinos. Mm-hmm. So you have a policy brief on the sort of the history of the casino, what it's meant economic-wise, right, job-wise. Go ahead and give our listeners an idea of, mm-hmm, you know, just starting from getting the casino up and operating in Pittsburgh, which was a tale in and of itself.
Right. I mean, obviously, we focus on the Pittsburgh area because that's where we're located, and the Rivers Casino was the big deal here in Pittsburgh. But I think the lesson can really be extrapolated to all the casinos around the state. You know, there's now 13 of them. If you count the two resort casinos, Valley Forge and Nemacolin in Fayette County. And so we'll go back to the Rivers Casino. When the licenses were first granted, it was sort of a crapshoot. You had three areas really vying for this thing, three separate ownerships. And, you know, the Station Square area of Pittsburgh, one was on the uptown side where they attached themselves to the hockey team and promised a new arena if they got the license. And then there was the third eventual winner, Mr. Barden, over on the north side near the football stadium. And, of course, those three were pretty highly contested. And then they tied the whole thing to the arena anyway. So once the license was won and things started to be built, Mr. Bard ran into some financial trouble. So this thing was shaky from the outset. And then he ended up selling a large portion to another investor, Mr. Bloom. And, of course, they finally opened the doors in August of 2009. So here we are, 2019, 10 years later, and we ask the question, okay, well, how is it doing? Well, its projections were a little shaky. The folks that owned the casino at the time said that from slots only that they expect the gross terminal revenues to be about $427 million a year. The gaming board was a little more cautious. They came in with 360-something or other, I think $364 million a year, and that would just be for the first year for slots only. Well, the Rivers fooled them. In their first year of operation, they made $222 million, so not exactly a rousing start. To make $300, $400 million a year, you need to average about $8 million a week. Across the Commonwealth, only one casino, and that's the Philadelphia Parks, has averaged close to $8 million a week. So I think overall the projections were higher than the reality actually turned out to be, especially for the Rivers Casino. So here you go. You're not making your projections. And the state says, I know, I've got a fix. Let's add table games. So now let's add more gaming to this. And, of course, the table games became operational in 2010. And the Rivers, like all the other casinos, added the table games. And that added, over the last 10 years, about $70 million to the mix. So the best year of slots was 284. You add 70 in tables, and you're still at like 350. So slightly less than what the gaming board was touting at 364, but certainly well less than the 427 from ownership. Again, and those were just slots only. You're now combined revenue. So they sort of just struggled along in their bid to make their revenue projections. Now, a couple things happened along the way that sort of slowed down. Ohio authorized slot gaming. Maryland authorized slot gaming. Those two states were not in the business of gaming until after Pennsylvania came along with their law. So I think the argument was at the time, and you know we've both been here long enough to know the arguments, well, we're keeping people from going across state borders. We're keeping people from going to West Virginia, at least in western PA, or New York to the Native American casinos, or to New Jersey if you're out in the eastern part of the state. We're keeping them from going there. We're keeping that money in. And oh, by the way, we'll drag up business from Maryland. We'll drag in business from Ohio. And while that may have worked that first year, now that both of those states have gaming, there's no reason to come into Pennsylvania. So the money that's now being wagered is primarily all local. You're not getting that out-of-town money that people thought that they might be getting. And so when you look at money wagered and the game commission stands there and they tell you how much money's come in for property tax relief, which was the original impetus for this thing in the first place, most of us don't even see much in the way of property tax relief. One point in time, I used to get a letter from my school district saying, oh, based on the gaming money, we're going to reduce your taxes by I don't know, X dollars a year. But instead of reducing it, we're just not going to raise the money. So we're going to keep the money. I don't even get that letter anymore. And I know my school district's still getting the money. It's just now they're entitled to it. So as far as property tax relief, with the exception of maybe some senior citizens, most of us don't see it. It's not even much of a ripple. And then the money that's actually being spent is money that's not being spent elsewhere. As we economists say, look at the opportunity cost. If you take $20 to the casino, that's $20 you're not using at the movie theater or groceries or buying whatever you need for your home or your auto. Money spent in one place cannot be spent somewhere else. So whenever they say, well, we got all this money, that's also money that's been taken out of another section of the Pennsylvania economy. So is it net new? I don't think so.
All right, so let's talk about the job picture then So the Rivers Casino is there. There's jobs that are related to it. Obviously, like you mentioned before, the table games are a bit more
labor-intensive.
Labor-intensive, thank you very much, than slot machines. So what has the job picture been in the Allegheny County or the Pittsburgh region from the Rivers?
Well, we look at the Pittsburgh region, and again, this goes with the state as well, and it has not been the big boom as everyone thought. Now, in the Pittsburgh Metropolitan Statistical Area, we do have the three casinos. We have the Rivers in Allegheny County, the Meadows in Washington County, and the Lady Luck at Nemacolin down in Fayette County. So those three casinos are in our metro area's job numbers. And when you look at non-farm job growth, our area is just anemic. We're really lagging the area. In the last 10 years, the growth of non-farm jobs in the Pittsburgh MSA has only been 6.2%. Statewide, 8.3%. Nationally, 16%. So we're really just not doing well. Now, the casinos that comes under leisure and hospitality. Now, it's one area that we usually had some strength, but for us, our leisure and hospitality strength is not in what's called the arts and recreation side. It's in the drinking and restaurant side. And so you're not getting a whole lot of growth, even under leisure and hospitality locally. You know, we're averaging only 2,500 jobs a year in these jobs. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that when we started looking in 2009 when the Rivers opened, and in all fairness, the Meadows only opened a handful of months before that, we were in a recession. So the numbers were down already. So most of the growth that we've had in leisure and hospitality even has been within the last 3 years. We're lagging the nation. We're lagging the state. It just has not been the boom. But the one thing that we need to keep in mind is gaming's here to stay.
Yeah, and Frank, not only that expansion, but as you mentioned, with other states and then the expansion of what's been added in gaming, but then we are going to have two new casinos because there's this whole other class of the mini casinos, and one will be in Westmoreland and one will be in Beaver County. But that's a topic for another day. Frank, thank you very much for these insights on the Rivers Casino. And as we always tell our listeners, you can always visit our website at www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter. And for Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
It is called the Fighting Chance Act, and it would bring regulatory relief across a broad spectrum of state agencies. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
April 30th marked a promising day for Pennsylvania workers, employers, and residents at large. The House passed a package of regulatory reform bills that would scale down the influence of Harrisburg and agencies over our ability to prosper. Improving the regulatory culture of the state is key to unleashing our potential and maximizing prosperity for all Pennsylvanians. This package of bills included reforms like a state-based RAINS Act, a permit transparency mechanism, and a bill that creates a regulatory compliance officer to help businesses navigate regulatory and compliance inquiries prior to the imposition of a penalty. These bills now reside in the Senate Intergovernmental Operations Committee and will be working with Senator Mastriano to ensure they're given a vote this fall. A meaningful reform that was left behind due to the bill being referred to another committee earlier this spring was House Bill 995, the Fighting Chance Act, a regulatory reduction pilot program. It was modeled after legislation that passed and was signed into law in Virginia just last year. House Bill 995 would create a pilot program for red tape reduction and would aim to reduce regulations in both the Board of Probation and Parole and the Bureau of Professional and Occupational Affairs by 25%. At the conclusion of the pilot program, the state will assess the outcomes and make recommendations to expand the program across other executive branch agencies. It would allow every state agency to count and catalog all regulations and requirements under its authority. It's critical that policymakers understand exactly how many rules, restrictions, and requirements are currently on the books in order to properly plan and implement reform. Based on research from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, We know that the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has one of the most burdensome regulatory codes in the country, and it weighs on every family, worker, and business. An accurate assessment of the size of the regulatory state is an important first step toward reducing unnecessary burdens that hold people back from realizing their potential. Progress in Virginia is already underway, and I'd like to share one of their results. The Virginia Department of Planning and Budget was tasked with leading the pilot program under the groundbreaking 2018 legislation. They recently completed a baseline count of the regulations within the required agencies, in Virginia being the Department of Criminal Justice Services and the Department of Professional and Occupational Regulations. They found that the total regulations in the Department of Criminal Justice Services totaled 3,507. 85% of those have been deemed discretionary, which means that 2,977 of the regulatory requirements currently enforced are not required by any state or federal law. That count establishes the baseline for which the 25% reduction must occur. That translates to around 744 requirements being eliminated by 2021. The next steps for Virginia and the DPB and the Secretary of Finance will come next month in October, when they will submit a report outlining the plan to get a 7.5% reduction in regulatory requirements during 2019. It will then be repeated in 2020 and 2021 to bring the total requirement reduction to 15% and 25% respectively. And in 2021, the Secretary of Finance will make recommendations on how to expand the pilot program and the feasibility of moving to a two-for-one regulatory budget. We can have a shared outcome, Pennsylvania. Let's be certain to encourage Representative Everett, Chairman of the House State Government Committee, to schedule House Bill 995 for a committee vote during the 3 months members will be in and out of the Capitol starting September 17th. Please visit our website, AmericansForProsperity.org. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP. And to find us on Twitter, please search at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including 5DRadio.com in Fraser, WMCE-FM in Erie, along with WZSK-AM in Everett, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. All of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.